All right, this is Truth for Today Bible class. And for the 17th of November, 1981. And our subject tonight is the 31st chapter of Isaiah. The 31st chapter of Isaiah. Now, we have been going through this, and probably, if folks don't understand it, it may be a little bit tiresome at times. It is hard to sort out the prophecies and tell to what part of history they belong. That is true. And yet, we find that this book of Isaiah is particularly concerning Israel, or we might say the part called Judah and Jerusalem, although Israel, the 10 tribes, are mentioned sometimes, too, but Isaiah was especially with Judah. If we do not follow the prophecies and be able to place them in our place, we have one general thing at least. There's a lot of good spiritual teaching in it. And Isaiah was trying to tell that to Israel. And these facts, these spiritual facts, are just as true today as they were then, excepting that we can maybe change the terminology a little bit at times as to whom and so on, like in this chapter here about going down to Egypt. Now it says, woe to them that go down to Egypt. And out of the six woes, this is the fourth one. So we've done half of the woes so far, and these are for Israel. Now, going down to Egypt, down is geographically on the map, it is down. Spiritually, it's down. So either way you put it. And we can go down to Egypt, that is, the things of the world, for our reliance and for our help in time of trouble rather than going to the Lord. So let's see what he says here. Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help, and stay on horses, and trust in chariots, because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. But they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. Now this is the charge. This is the thing that he is pronouncing as a woe. And the trust is in Egypt. Now this first chapter is the woe. They go down to Egypt for help instead of trusting on the Lord. They try to hire the Egyptians to fight for them or to give them chariots and horses and so on. Our nations are having the same trouble with armaments and so on in this day today. But really, we can't say woe to any of them on that account because not any of them are God's people. Not any of them are Israel today, even though we have a people called Israel, but this is not in fulfillment of any prophecy, and they're not Israel. So I say we cannot use it as a national lesson today, but we surely can use it as an individual one, or for a group, called an assembly or church or whatever. All too often, when they get into financial difficulties, they will put on a program and have the world to help. If they get into spiritual difficulties, they may go to the law and so on, instead of settling it spiritually. There are a lot of ways in which individuals today and groups can go down to Egypt for help instead of trusting the Lord. And so they stay on horses. That is, put their trust in horses and trust in chariots. Because they, that is, the horses are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. For they look not unto the Holy One of Israel. Now, we're not looking unto the Holy One of Israel today, and yet he is the same person, but not in that relationship. He is the head of the church, which is his body today. Or those who have not gotten into the church, which is his body, can look to John 3:16 and such ones as that, which are written for unbelievers to start with, and you'll find a lot of help there. Now, verse 2 takes up Jehovah and his rejection. Yet He also is wise, that is Jehovah, the Lord, and will bring evil, and will not call back his words. He brings evil for their chastisement, brings evil on them that they may finally turn to him instead of Egypt. That's the idea. When they find Egypt won't help, then they find as a final resort, you know, like we do today, and they'll turn to their God. How sad that is, that he's always last. And so he'll bring evil and he won't call back his words. In other words, he's, what he says goes. But will arise against the house of the evildoers. He'll be against them in many ways. And against the help of them that work iniquity. Even the help will be against, that is, Egypt. They work iniquity. Now, verse 3 in our outline is about trusting in Egypt, how vain it is. Now, the Egyptians are men, just ordinary men, and not God. And their horses are flesh, not spirit. Now, can you get the comparison? They are to trust in God and his spirit. But instead, they trust on the Egyptians and the horses. The horses as if they were spirit. Now, when you come to think about it, that's pretty silly, isn't it? But that's what they're doing. Now, in the rest of verse 3, when the Lord shall stretch out his hand, both he that helpeth shall fall, that is, the Egyptians will fall, they're helping, and he that holpeth, that is, those that have been helped, shall fall down, and they shall all fall together. In other words, the Lord's going to see to it that they do not get any help from Egypt, that they'll have to rely on him. And so if Egypt does help them, they'll fail, and so will Israel, and they'll fall together. And that is just about the way it is in our own lives. We depend on anything else but God, or anybody but a God, and the whole thing will fail. For thus hath the Lord spoken unto me, that is Isaiah speaking, and quote, like as the lion and the young lion roaring on his prey, when a multitude of shepherds is called forth against him, he will not be afraid of their voice, nor abase himself for the noise of them. So shall the Lord of hosts come down to fight for Mount Zion and for the hill thereof. Now that isn't the end of the quote there, but we'll stop with that verse. We have to note these things as we go along. For thus hath the Lord spoken unto me. And then, now just imagine it. A lion, a young one, that's unafraid, strong, roaring on his prey. That is a lion prey. He's, of course, you know, the lion is a little bit like the eagle. He'll make a great big noise to freeze his victim. They're so scared that they can't move. And then he can grab them. They don't, can't even run away. And so he says, even though there be a multitude of shepherds to come to the help out of the prey, the lamb or whatever it is, why the lion won't be afraid of their voice, and he'll keep going, or will he abase himself or take himself away because of their noise. And so shall the Lord of hosts come down to fight for Mount Zion and for the hill thereof, that is, like the shepherds. And notice this verse 5. As birds flying, so will the Lord of hosts defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve it. Birds flying here, that's the older birds hovering over the nest with their wings and protecting the young. And so in like manner, the Lord of hosts will defend Jerusalem, hovering over it, as a bird over a nest, keeping them from evil about. And defending, he will also deliver it. Not only just defend it, but he will deliver it. And passing over, he will preserve it. A passing over, like the Passover in Egypt. And so he will cause them to escape. Verse 6, turn ye unto him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted. No guessing about him in that case. Turn unto the Lord, their Jehovah, from whom they have deeply revolted. That deeply is rather an expressive word here in this case, for that rebellion is very deep-seated, hard to erase, hard to do anything with. You see, in our studies in rebellion some time back, we spoke of the rebellion of Israel, and all the way through, from the time of Jacob until the end of Acts, it just seems one revolt, one rebellion after another. For in that day, whatever that day is, every man shall cast away his idol of silver and his idols of gold, which your own hands have made unto you for a sin. Yes, the day is coming when the Lord will appear, and when he will take over, and they will cast out those idols if they are an abominable, dirty thing. When they really see and know the Lord, those things will be an awful abomination. And they made it with their own hands, and it's a sin. How often we do that with our own hands. We invent, we do things. Verse 8, then, in that day, shall the Assyrian fall with the sword. Now again, we must repeat that a great deal of this is in fear of Assyria. Israel knows that they're plotting, they're getting their armaments together, the armies and so on, and intend to not only take Israel, but to plunder all of that part of the country. Tyre and Sidon and the whole bunch. And so Israelites are afraid. Well, if they trusted in the Lord, they wouldn't be afraid. Now that takes trust, that takes belief, takes faith, to be able to trust when everything seems to be against you. But you know, you can just take it calmly, you can take it easily whenever those things happen, and just in your mind knowing, well, it's going to come out all right somehow, because all things work together for good to them that love the Lord, and are the called, you know. So whatever it is, we take it from God's hand, if we're in faith. And we do not complain. We do not revolt or anything of the kind when anything comes upon us, but just take it from His hand. We never know at the bottom of it what is there. That is, why it's, what it's for, and the purpose it is being used, whatever the misfortune may be that we have. And so in that day, the Assyrians shall fall with a sword, and Israel won't do it. Or the Egyptians. And says, not of a mighty man. And a sword, not of a mean man, shall devour him, that is the Assyrian. And he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited, that is, be scattered. So the day is coming when these things are going to happen to Assyria, and that's a comfort to Israel. But it's not going to pass until they put their trust in the Lord and turn away from those Egyptians. You see, this is what happens so often. You go to the world for help, as they go to the Egyptians and so on, And so often these folks turn around and fight against them and take all they have. Hezekiah one time showed what he had in his treasury and so on. Very unwise. And he lost it. And so there is this danger that we go to somebody for help and expose ourselves and we get the worst end of it. And he, the Syrian, shall pass over to his stronghold or flee to his stronghold in fear. That is, he'll fortify himself, probably right back in Babylon, or Nineveh, whichever. And his princes shall be afraid of the ensign. And there'll be an ensign shown when the Lord is fighting for Israel. He's promised that time after time there'll be something shown. Saith the Lord, whose fire is in Zion, and his furnace in Jerusalem. A little hard to tell just what it means by that. There's a fire against enemies, but there's also a fire for their testing, for their correction. And that's in Zion, and also speaks of as being Jerusalem. And Zion and Jerusalem, of course, are the same place, the same thing. Well, that is the end of chapter 31, the fourth woe. Now we go into chapter 32. And we have some bright prophecy here. Well, there'll be two main things in this chapter 32, and it's not very long. The first is the king reigning in righteousness. That is a king who reigns in righteousness. That's not David's, or Solomon, or Saul, or Hezekiah, or any of the rest of them. This is going to be a king who's going to reign in righteousness someday. He hasn't yet. And then the last part of it is concerning the Spirit poured out. The king will reign in righteousness, and the Spirit will be poured out. There's the combination, and always that is the foretelling. Now, 32, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment. And we find the Lord promising the 12 apostles that they will sit upon 12 thrones as princes, as rulers, and reign with him. And so here is the promise of just that sort of a situation. We find also others besides the 12 overcomers in the 7 churches in Asia Minor in the Revelation, that they also will rule with him. And in those days, a man shall be as an hiding place from the wind, and a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water in dry place, as a shadow of great rock in a weary land. Now, speaking of a man, the word is just simply Ish, meaning a man, not Adam, but just a man, Ish. And a man at that time, a righteous man, of course, I will be under this righteous king, shall be in hiding place from the wind. A hiding place from the wind. And it's just ruach. And that, of course, could mean a wind of adversity as well as an actual wind. And a covert, that is, a hiding place from the tempest. And as rivers in a dry place. Yes, I think there are men today who are a little like that. There are men that people turn to, righteous, spiritual men, as an hiding place and the like, because they see in them strength. They can give them good advice. They can give them help. And so here, in this time, in the millennium, a man, just an ordinary man, of course, these will be saved, resurrected people, and they have the Spirit, which is coming along later in the chapter. And they'll be like rivers of water, that is, watering the desert, which is a blessed thing. And as a shadow of a great rock in a weary land that really should be thirsty. And my, oh my, out in the desert, it's nice to get into the shadow of a rock when the sun is blazing down. There's a coolness about it. There's coolness also under the shadow of a tree. But all too often you don't find that kind of a tree in a desert land, but you can get in the shadow of a rock. Now, of course, a man can be a rock there, and also the rock is Christ. Verse 3, and the eyes of them that see shall not be dim in the millennium, and the ears of them that hear shall hearken. In other words, they will listen, as we say. They will hearken to what is being said. They won't be thinking of something else. They won't be following their own devices and so on and miss what's being said. And so people will be able to see, not only physically, but spiritually as well. They'll go together very much. And will be able to hear and to hearken and listen. The heart also, the rash, shall understand knowledge. Now, rash people ordinarily don't stop to think. And it says here, shall understand knowledge, so they're going to stop to think. And the tongue of the stammerers shall be ready to speak plainly. Those who cannot express themselves will have a witness. They can speak plainly. This will be a witness to the nations during that time, remember. And they will have to listen to their instructions from their leader. And they will have to be able to speak clearly to those to whom they witness. And remember that in the millennial times, that all will be witnesses. It won't be just leaders who will do that witnessing like it is in Christendom today. The ordinary Christian thinks he doesn't have anything to do. Hires his preacher to do it. And that's like going down to Egypt. And a vile person shall no longer be called liberal. A vile person is simply a fool. And so the fool will no longer be called liberal. I don't know whether fools ordinarily are liberal or not. Maybe not. Of course, the word here in your, really in this context means noble. And so in that day, the fool will no longer be called, shall no longer be called a noble. We do that with people today. They're vile persons that get into high places in government, churches and what, and yet they're just fools. But in that day, he will be changed and he'll no longer be called that. Nor the churl said to be bountiful. That is, that he might be a covetous man. He'll be said to be liberal with his goods and so on. In other words, he'll be able to give, although he's been a miser, a stingy person. For the vile person, that is, a fool, will speak villainy. That's what they do ordinarily. And his heart will work iniquity to practice hypocrisy and to utter error against the Lord, to make empty the soul of the hungry. Now, make empty the soul of the hungry. Soul is the body. Make empty the soul of the hungry. Don't give him anything to eat. And he will cause the drink of the thirsty to fail. He won't even help them. Well, that's a fool. That's a vile person. Now about the churl. The instruments, the actions, and so on, also the churl, are evil. Being a miser and so on, he will get everything he can. If they continue in that, he deviseth wicked devices to destroy. Well, we had that pictured in the Lord's time by the priests and the Pharisees who robbed widows and orphans and so on, destroy them that they might become rich. But the liberal deviseth liberal things. Now getting back to that word liberal is noble. The noble person devises noble things. That's his way of doing. his way of living. And by liberal things shall he stand. By noble things shall he stand. He has his standing to that among the people, his reputation, and light. That's true yet today. Now we change here a little bit in verse 9, another paragraph. Rise up, ye women that are at ease. Now, we might think at first here that's just referring to women, but it's referring to Israel. Like a bunch of women. But after all, Israel is a bride, you know. So, maybe it isn't bad, you see. It's no bad connotation here particularly. But it just says, rise up, ye women that are at ease. You've been playing around. You haven't turned to the Lord. You haven't done anything for him. He says, hear my voice, ye careless daughters, calls them daughters also. And of course, the daughters of Zion are Israel. Give ear unto my speech. He says, listen to me, what I've got to say. You idle folks aren't doing anything. Now he says, many days and years shall ye be troubled, ye careless women. That's the future now of Israel, Judah. For the vintage shall fail. That is, there won't be any grapes. The gathering shall not come. Harvest time come, nothing to harvest. All gone. That'll be years of famine and the like, desolations, so forth. Tremble, ye women that are at ease. Wake up. Be troubled, ye careless ones. Strip you, take off your clothes, and make you bare, and gird sackcloth upon your loins. Now that just simply means to repent. Of course, the word repent is hardly used of Israel in the Old Testament. It's always turn ye, and you'll find that probably in this chapter. Turn ye is the equivalent of the repent that we have in the Gospels in our New Testament, where they were repent for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. That is in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John doesn't use the word repent at all because he has a different message. They, that is, people shall lament for the teats. That is, be hungry. And especially we think there would be the children to be hungry. And there'll be lament for the pleasant fields, and there will lament for the fruitful vine. So young and old will be sorrowing because there's nothing to eat. And upon the land of my people shall come up thorns and briars. Yea, upon all the houses of joy in the joyous city. Thorns and briars. Now, in the kingdom of heaven parables, the thorns and the briars are spoken of as the cares of this world. And that's what they do to people. It's just like thorns and briars. You can't raise any crop because that's on the ground. You can't have any fruit. You can't have anything to eat. Well, your ground is being occupied with such things as that. Now, we find in Israel that whenever the land was not occupied, they're taken away in captivity or too lazy to plant their fields and so on, that the briars and the thorns would take over. And they do that yet today. At least on my place they do. You've got to keep cultivating and keep working all the time or they just take over and soon have a jungle on the place. And so it was in the land of Israel, the land of Canaan. It didn't quickly grow big trees or anything like that, but just a mess of underbrush. It's hard to get through, thorns, briars, and so forth. And, of course, of no use. Now, we find in one reference, I believe it's in James, I'm not sure, about a field about to be burnt. Well, one way that they got rid of these thorns and so on is when they were good and dry is to set fire to them, burn them up. Then cultivate the ground. And I have seen that sort of thing practiced myself. When there's ground was cumbered with a lot of stuff you couldn't get rid of, I just burn it off when it's good and dry. And then you can get in and cultivate. So we have things here that we can sort of understand in our own day, because the methods of agriculture and things growing in the fields haven't changed very much. Verse 13, upon the land of my people shall come up thorns and briars, yea, upon all the houses of joy in the joyous city. And we just said that now. 14, because the palaces shall be forsaken. I'll just use the key of why the briars and so on come up. The multitude of the city shall be left. That is, they'll leave. The forts and the towers shall be for dens forever. A joy of wild asses, a pasture of flocks. That's how desolate it's going to be. Even wild asses will get into the places in the city for cover and so on. And a pasture for flocks, not desirable flocks. Now it says forever. Now you find this sometimes in the Bible. But do you notice the word until in the next verse? That's forever until the Spirit be poured upon us from on high. Get that picture? A man can become a servant to his master forever if he so chooses. But of course, that's until his death. So this word forever is not a word meaning eternity particularly. It's just an age. Have a near or a distant ending doesn't make any difference. And so that is the condition. All of this that we've been talking about here in these few verses is a condition until the Spirit be poured upon us from on high. Now Joel speaks about that Spirit, and Peter speaks about it in Joel's prophecy in Acts 2, when the Spirit will be poured out upon all flesh, especially on the young men and young women, their daughters and sons, they'll prophesy and so on. And that day is coming. And so when that day comes, then the wilderness will be a fruitful field, and the fruitful field be counted for a forest. Things will really grow. Well, there'll be the former and the latter rain, and if those come as ordinarily they should, then there is fruitful harvest. Two of them, two harvests during the year. They can have two Thanksgivings. Now, we're not too far from a Thanksgiving now, and possibly that is a little bit of a throwback, the early fathers of our country, to the Feast of Tabernacles or Thanksgiving in the fall of the Israelites, excepting that their Thanksgiving came about the last of September, and our season not being like theirs, we got it way over into November. Everything is brought in, and sometimes after a blizzard or two. Then, verse 16, then judgment shall dwell in the wilderness, and righteousness shall remain in the fruitful field. What he's trying to tell is this, that there will be an equal and fair judgment for folks, even in the wilderness. There will not be a hiding place for thieves and robbers, but there will be judgment there, good judgment. And righteousness shall remain in the fruitful field. Won't be an unrighteousness there. There won't be any hiding and so on of things. And the work of righteousness shall be peace. Oh, did you ever think of that? A work of righteousness is peace? Well, I think that's a pretty good expression. Very expressive. If we work righteousness, we have peace. If we work unrighteousness, we certainly don't have peace. Well, a little lesson there, you see. Little sermons all the way through. And the effect of righteousness, quietness and assurance forever. Now, the work of righteousness here could, in this particular instance, mean the tilling of the fields. Because that's what they get out. We've been talking about the thorns and the briars and so on. Now, when they get the tilling in the fields, and it's done in righteousness, there'll be peace. And the effect of this righteousness, be quietness and an assurance forever. You have quietness, you have assurance. Or are you living on pins and needles, worrying from day to day? The Lord told his disciples not to put any thought on tomorrow. Now that word thought back in the old English meant to worry yourself sick about tomorrow. Don't worry about things. Of course you provide, you work, and so on, but just don't worry about it. This can be peacefulness and quietness and so on as one works to provide for himself and his family. And my people, Israel, shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings. That is, they're sure they won't be subject to ruin by enemies and so on, but they'll be sure to them. And in quiet resting places. Oh, how many people today would like to get out somewhere in a quiet resting place, away from the rat race and all of the hullabaloo that's going on in the world today. Well, that's the way it goes. Back here on the farm where it's quiet and so on, we're always glad to get back after we take a trip to the city somewhere. It's so different. The freeways and all of the hustle and the bustle. And even the fear of being out on the street at night, or even in the daytime in some places. And here Israel is promised in the future that they shall dwell in peaceable habitation, in sure dwellings, and in quiet resting places. That's a wonderful promise, a wonderful thing to look forward to. When it shall hail, coming down on the forest, and the city shall be low in a low place, still be peaceful and quiet, even though the hail may come down in the forest, it's not going to hurt them. And then the last verse of 32. Blessed are ye that sow beside all waters. Now that may sound strange to you, but I've explained this once before. We've had this thing come up. That quite often when they sow, they've overflowed the land just slightly, so it's all good and wet. And while there's some water there, they can scatter the seed, and it'll sort of sink into the mud. And the water sort of wash it in, and they don't even have to cover it up or go over to the harrow or brush. Of course, now, in some instances, they just take some brush and drag it over after the seed is planted on the ground, and that'll get some of it down into the soil. They had various ways of doing that. I've seen that done. And sowing some grass seed and so on, just take some brush and drag it around over the ground, and it'll get it into the ground. Now, some seed needs a deeper planting than that. For instance, in our country, you wouldn't plant corn that way because it's got to be down deeper than that. But sowing oats in the spring, that usually when the ground is wet, and a person can broadcast them by hand with a sack on the shoulder, and then just harrow the ground with a team, or, as I said, I've seen it done. I've seen my daddy do it many years ago. Just take some brush and cut some of the finer limbs off of it so it'll scratch, and drag that back and forth over the place, and it'll grow. Now here, it speaks about something else here. They sow beside the waters, and send forth thither the feet of the ox and the ass. Now, in the case of some of the grain that needs a little bit more covering and so on, like I was just talking about, they get to turn loose the stalk on it, they tramp it in. And so he sends forth thither the feet of the ox and the ass. So if they'll tramp this seed in, their barley and rye and wheat and so on, which need a little more soil and grasses, and especially oats, which seems to germinate easily. It has a good shell on the hull to hold the moisture, and so it grows real well. Now that takes us to the end of that chapter, 32. When we start in with chapter 33, we come to the fifth of the six woes. I wish you would just take time to go back over those woes and read each one what it says. You see, he gives a woe, he tells what's going to happen, and so on. And then he gives the promises of Jehovah, what will be for them when they turn back and repent and come to Jehovah. These alternate all the way through here. That's the reason why we have these six woes till we get through with chapter 35. Woe to thee that spoilest, and that thou wast spoiled, and dealest treacherously, and they dealt not treacherously with thee. When thou shalt cease to spoil, thou shalt be spoiled. And when thou shalt make an end to deal treacherously, they shall deal treacherously with thee. Now that's a pretty hard one to explain, isn't it? Now spoiling means plundering. That is, fighting against an enemy and taking what he has. Well, in the time that Israel was living then, it was either plunder or be plundered. And we're getting almost to that state today in our own country. There's not much peacefulness, not much chance to really enjoy what you have. You've got to guard everything that you have. And, of course, now Israel guarded things that they had. Now, when the Lord was talking to Israel in Matthew's gospel especially, he said, now, lay not up treasures for yourself on earth, but where rust corrupts and thieves break in and steal and so on, the moth gets in. But in heaven, and then in the revelation to the very last, he says, behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me. Those things that they've laid up in heaven, he will bring back as a reward to them when he comes. Well, that is a little bit of the idea that comes in here. Israel's gotten into the place with their unbelief and their rejection of God that they just have to plunder or they be plundered. They're not having peace. That's the woe. And then they make a prayer to Jehovah. O Lord, Jehovah, be gracious unto us. We have waited for thee. Be thou their arm every morning, our salvation also in the time of trouble. At the noise of the tumult, the people fled. At the lifting up of thyself, the nations were scattered. Prophetic, as if it had happened. And you find your prophecy so much that way all the way through. And your spoil shall be gathered like the gathering of the caterpillar, as a running to and fro locust shall he run upon them. They're going to be a hard time, hard times ahead. Oh yes, they had depressions and panics and all the rest of the things that they call them back in those days. Each one that comes along, we give it a new name as if it was something new. But they all come along ever since this country has started and adopted its constitution, and even before, it's had its good times and its bad times, had plenty and had depression. And here, the caterpillar gathers and the locusts run, so on. The Lord is exalted, for he dwelleth on high. He has filled Zion with judgment and righteousness. And wisdom and knowledge shall be the stability of thy times, and strength of salvation. The fear of the Lord is his treasure. So we have the spoiler coming in, and then we have praise to Jehovah, as we had here in 5 and 6, the Lord is exalted. And then we have another spoiler coming in. We're going to have to leave that for the next time because our time here is up.